Red Eye is non-commercial, listener-supported, alternative radio, broadcast from Vancouver, BC, on Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM. Here's Mordecai Breenberg.
Two major daily London newspapers have carried lengthy reports on the cancer plague in Iraq. The plague is a direct result of the use of radioactive weapons by the U.S. and British military. To counter the censorship of this information in the Canadian media, we've read excerpts from these articles by reporters Robert Fisk and Maggie O'Kane. Still, ordinary Canadians know next to nothing about the use of these weapons of mass destruction against the people of Iraq, and they also know nothing about the effects of radioactive weapons called depleted uranium shells on ordinary Americans in towns where the weapons are being manufactured and tested. On the phone from New Mexico is Damasio Lopez. He has been researching the effects of uranium bullets on the residents of his hometown for many years. And in December, he also attended an international conference on depleted uranium that was held in Baghdad. Good morning, Damasio.
Good morning, Mordecai.
And welcome to Co-op Radio. We're really glad to get in touch with you.
Well, I'm the one that's glad to be on the radio with you.
You told me before we went on air that you were once a golf pro in Edmonton, Alberta. How did you get from the golf links to researching uranium bullets?
That's pretty interesting. I came to Socorro after an accident. I was on my way to the Phoenix Open to play a golf tournament there, and I had an automobile accident and injured myself and came back to Socorro to recuperate, and while I was in Socorro, I kept witnessing all these explosions right next to my house, less than 2 miles, and looked into it and started doing some researching and nosing around, and the people in town had been told that these were conventional weapons they were testing, and they had been testing them since 1972. This was back in 1985. And lo and behold, I found out there was something called depleted uranium. And so I confronted the president of New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology, which are the people that were responsible for getting these, for doing this testing. And the president looked at me when I mentioned depleted uranium. He looked kind of shocked. And then he kind of got a hold of himself. And I was wearing some old overalls and had cement on my pants, and he looked at me and he said, "What's the matter with you, boy? Don't you understand English? It's depleted of uranium. You ought to go learn English."
Is that racism fairly prevalent in New Mexico?
Well, you know, it certainly sounded pretty racist to me, and it really irritated me that this man would speak down to me this way. And I thought, well, I guess I'm not going to go back into golf. It looks like I'm going to be figuring out what this is all about here. Something's going on here.
When you got back to Socorro, you were recovering from the car accident, yes, and there were these explosions. Could you describe just a little bit what this test site is like and where it's located in relation to the town?
Sure. I should say that I've been researching this issue for about 14 years now, ever since 1985, and never in my life, or never in this 13, 14 years of research, have I ever found a facility this close, depleted uranium testing facility, this close to a town. The facility is 2 miles from Socorro on the west side of town, directly atop of the groundwater supply of the community. And they've been testing these bullets there since 1972, unbeknownst to the people in the town. The people in town, as I said earlier, thought they were conventional weapons, and they did open-air testing, and the prevailing winds over the mountain come right over the community. And my house, where my parents live, it's one of the first houses that this black cloud of smoke crosses into the community. I found out as time went by that black cloud of smoke was raining radioactivity on the people in that community, and the people at New Mexico Tech and the people doing all this testing and the government, they all knew that they were exposing the community to radioactive contamination, as I found out later on.
And when you first got back, the story was these were conventional weapons. Would conventional weapons usually give off those kind of clouds?
Yes, they would, because what they were doing is they were using, in the past, they said, well, these are just explosives that were exploding there on the mountain. They're just conventional, and people need not be concerned about them. So they misled the community into believing that they were safe, and the community believed them. And one of the things they would tell the people in the town is that they needed to be patriotic, that this was weapons research that they were doing for our government, and that we should be happy that they're doing it in Socorro.
And what did you find about the effects of these depleted uranium shells, these uranium bullets, as you called them?
Okay. Before I talk about the effects on the people, let me say that these bullets are not hardened with depleted uranium, as has been reported in the press many times. This is a pure slug of uranium that comes out of the barrel. And when it hits the target, this since it is radioactive and the target is a hard target, usually they're trying to penetrate armor, and they do this open air. When the projectile hits a target, it begins to burn. And when the projectile finally stops, a 120 millimeter projectile weighs about 18 pounds. And when this projectile finally comes to a stop, there's only anywhere from 20 to 50% of the projectile left. The rest of it sent up this black smoke with this breathable particles of uranium oxides in it. And so people would, the theory is that people will breathe this and it'll go into their lungs and into their GI tract and eventually into their blood. And then there would be kidney damage from both the radioactive material and the heavy metals and the depleted uranium. What I found in Socorro after I found out it was depleted uranium, I looked into, try to find out if there was any health problems in the community, of course. And what I found was a lot of anecdotal information. People would say, cancer's been real prevalent in this community, and most families either have someone in their family, extended family, who's either has cancer or who has died of cancer. And then I went to the environmental department and checked in, state environmental department in New Mexico, and I checked their files, and lo and behold, I found a whole slew of letters from complaints from citizens who had been suffering from birth defects, or members of their family had been. And one of those birth defects that I saw, and it was just letters, so I didn't see any proof that this was true, but I saw this one particular disease or birth defect that kept coming up over and over again. It was called hydrocephalus. Hydrocephalus is when a child is born without a brain, and instead of a brain, they have water in their head, and a rather large head, and they don't live very long, obviously. I kept seeing that particular birth defect come up over and over again, so I started doing some investigating, and it took me a long time. I saw where there had been something like five or something like that alleged during a five-year period. So I started doing a study into the, I started checking into this, went through the health department, and I finally got a document from the health department verifying that they had 3 cases of hydrocephalus reported in Socorro during a five-year period between 1983, I believe, and 1988. And the entire state of New Mexico had 19, and the state of New Mexico is a little over 1.5 million people. The town of Socorro is only 7,000 people. 3 cases of hydrocephalus in Socorro was too much. And I realized at that point we had a problem.
And you began documenting this elsewhere in the United States as well?
Yes. What I did... I never went back to golf, as I mentioned earlier, and I started doing a lot of research, and eventually in 1993, myself and Grace Bukowski and Mac McGeehee released a report called Uranium Battlefields at Home and Abroad, the Use of Depleted Uranium by the U.S. Department of Defense. And we went to Washington, D.C. and released this report there. And I was really surprised at the amount of foreign press that showed up in Washington for this press release. I thought, you know, we had a local issue here. And but we did find about 50 sites across the United States and documented in our report uranium battlefields of other places like Socorro. And so this basically made the link between depleted uranium weapons and the Gulf War syndrome. And at that point, I got to know a lot of the Gulf War veterans and worked with them on this issue for quite a while, and I continue to do it today. And the birth defects and the cancers of the Gulf War vets corresponded with the ones in Socorro. And this was this was pretty rough, you know, when I saw this correlation. And then I was invited to Baghdad last December to come there for this international conference on the health effects of depleted uranium that was shot by the British and U.S. forces into Iraq.
How much did they? What's the estimate of the amount of uranium shells that they inflicted in the war?
The U.S. government admitted to 315 tons of depleted uranium that they felt what they shot in the war. The British also shot depleted uranium in there, and I think they had a very small number. However,
that's about 600,000 pounds, right? Something excessive.
Well, I'm not quite sure how much the British said they shot. I think it was something like 1,000 pounds of depleted uranium. But the U.S. troops supposedly used 315 tons, and that 315 tons, I should say, was what they estimated came from projectiles fired out of tanks and fired out of airplanes and fired out of helicopters. What they didn't estimate was the amount of depleted uranium in cruise missiles in the 1991 Gulf War. Depleted uranium is used in the cruise missiles as a ballast, and it's also on the nose cone of the missile. And that that amount of depleted uranium has never been made public, the amount that was used on the cruise missiles themselves. And those cruise missiles that we saw in this last bombing of Iraq back in December, middle part of December, contained depleted uranium in them as well. And I'm sure that people, when they watched in the television set, saw where when these cruise missiles hit the targets, there wasn't anything left of the material in the projectile, obviously, or the missile. All of that went up in smoke, and all of this smoke turns into dust and settles in the areas, surrounding areas, where those cruise missiles hit. And the people in the area, in this particular case, many people in Baghdad, were having to be exposed to this contamination.
And what did you learn at that conference about the effects of these vast amounts of depleted uranium that have been bombed, been used as missiles and other mortar shells? What effects have they had on the population of Iraq?
Well, it was pretty frightening to sit there in the audience and listen to these medical doctors, one after the other, talk about the birth defects and the cancers. Something like over 300% there was about defects and cancers. But what was so frightening to me, and it was like, you know, when we wrote Uranium Battlefields, we talked about the hypothetical situation of what could happen and what might happen in Iraq. And it was all, you know, I took a bunch of government documents and we put this report together. But never did I ever think that I would be sitting in an audience listening to a country talk about the effects of this depleted uranium and find that what we talked about in our 1993 report, that the horrible tragedies of this depleted uranium would in fact become true. And that was scary. And since then I've been shocked. I've been shocked about what has happened in Iraq. And I believe there's places in Iraq that have become inhabitable, that will never be cleaned up. Depleted uranium it's impossible to clean the depleted uranium because, as I said earlier, somewhere between 20 and 70% of that projectile, when it hits a target, goes up in smoke and it turns into dust, and the wind carries it in different directions. In the United States, there's been a lot of efforts to clean some of these sites, and what they do is they scrape up the first 2 feet of dirt. And when you have large areas as big as Iraq, which is about the size of New Mexico, and you try to scrape up all that dirt, where are you going to take it? So what we have here is a situation where that country has become permanently contaminated, just like Socorro. Except much heavier. The use of depleted uranium was much heavier in Iraq. In Socorro, they were just testing it next to our hometown, but the amount, the tonnage that was used in Iraq was very significant.
There was in Canada anyway almost no, I would say no media coverage of the conference in Baghdad.
I met Dr. Sharma there in Baghdad.
Uh-huh.
He's the Canadian doctor. He's from the University of Waterloo. I believe it's Ontario.
Yes.
And he was at this conference. Dr. Sharma is presently carrying out tests on veterans who were in the war, and he's still checking their urine because what's happened is the soldiers breathed a lot of uranium particles into their body. Many of them got caught in the lungs, and some of those particles in the lungs are still breaking down, so he can still trace them in the urine.
So there were international scientists as well as Iraqi scientists?
Yes, that's correct. There was.
And I gather there were also some Gulf War soldiers from the U.S. military as well as the British military attended.
One Gulf War veteran from the United States that went there, Carol Picou, and I traveled with her from Atlanta, and there were two Gulf War veterans from Great Britain that were there.
So why how would you explain that the media, CNN, is in Baghdad regularly? Other major American media are there. Why didn't they report anything?
Well, they did. They came up to us and would take the microphone and put it in front of us and say, "How do you feel about being a traitor and coming here to Iraq?" That was the approach that CNN took, and some of the other major media. They tried to make us out to be like traitors because we were there trying to get health information about our communities. Carol Picou is a soldier, and she was on the front line there in the war in 1991, and she's suffering from the Gulf War syndrome. She's very ill, and she was there to try and get information so she could help herself. And I think the media, like CNN, was very cruel to her. In trying to make her look like she was somehow abetting the enemy, and all she was trying to do was trying to get information that she couldn't get here in the United States about health effects of depleted uranium, because the Gulf War vets, just like the people in Socorro, had been trying for a long, long time to get health studies to find out, you know, if the depleted uranium had affected them. The Army and the U.S. government has consistently refused any kind of health studies. And so when Iraq did this, they began their health studies way back in 1991 on both the civilians and the military. So people like myself, I live right next to this facility, or did, I moved away from there, and Carol Picou, and then some people that were in the Gulf War from Great Britain, well, we were all there trying to get information so that we could help ourselves and help our families and help Americans who were sick. And the way we were treated by the media, the mainstream media like CNN, was not right. They were trying to make us out to be some kind of villains, and all we were trying to do was try to get good information. And we did get a lot of good information. And since I brought the information back, and I did a press release as soon as I got back here in New Mexico, and I have circulated the data on the Iraqi studies very, very widely across the Southwestern and the United States. I've done a lot of interviews, and I've talked about what happened there and the suffering that the people of Iraq are going through.
Well, thank you for taking time today to speak with us, and I know those reports have also been put up on a website. I've been speaking with Damasio Lopez in New Mexico, the United States of America. Damasio is the research director of revisioning New Mexico, and he has conducted, as he explained, research specifically on the effects of uranium bullets.
For more information or to support Red Eye, check out the webpage at www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye.